Blog Talk Radio.
Voice of Destiny brings you your favorite Christian authors, speakers, and filmmakers each week. Listen in as our guests teach and encourage, listeners share their stories, and we go live to the front lines of what God is doing across the world. Now, get ready for the Voice of Destiny.
Well, we have a very exciting show today. This is Larry Sparks, host of Voice of Destiny. I have not one but two exciting guests with us talking about an extremely relevant topic. You know, when it comes to the subject of terrorism, ISIS, and radical Islam, a lot of us want to start at the place of asking this question. Well, what is their ideology? Because we believe that their ideology, their ideals, their ideas, those things motivate their acts of terrorism. Well, with Dr. Craig Evans and Dr. Jeremiah Johnston, we're going beyond that. We're going a step back because there is actually something that motivates this ideology of terrorism. And the very thing that motivates it, I think once we put our finger on that and are able to discern that and are able to be aware of it, I believe that's going to help us and strengthen us and equip us in this war against terrorism. So today we're going to talk about not only the ideology of ISIS, the theology of ISIS, and our authors, Dr. Jeremiah Johnston and Dr. Craig Evans, have released their brand new book, Jesus and the Jihadis. Thank you so much, both of you, for being with us on the show today.
Great to be with
Good
you,
to be with you, Larry.
I want to dive in immediately because this is such a timely book. It's such a timely message because so many people get wrapped up in terrorist ideology, but you both really bring us back and help us to focus on what the theology of ISIS is. So let me ask this question. You both can take turns. How is the ISIS ideology linked to its theology, and why is that important?
Now, it's hugely important because radical Muslims take their religious beliefs very seriously and want to act on them. And so you cannot understand their actions, why they do what they do, if you don't understand the theology that is lying behind the ideology and the philosophy of their behavior.
And I think also, Craig, that it's so important that we address the fact that so many Christians feel ill-equipped, especially in the West, to address the subject not only of ISIS, but of Islam in general. And so as we got together, Craig and I have traveled extensively all over the world, archaeological sites. We've lectured throughout North America, the UK, and in Israel. We began to notice that Christians, they fear what they don't know. And so as it relates to Islam and as it relates now to this latest iteration of the Islamic State, they needed to be resourced. They needed to be equipped to know what to make of all of this. So I think that's a driving force for why we wrote the book.
Absolutely. And again, it's one of those things, you use the word equipped. I think you're completely right. So many Christians feel ill-equipped to engage this particular topic. At the same time, we notice so much cultural sensitivity towards it. You know, we're afraid to use certain words. We are reluctant to call a spade, as it were. We're reluctant to call it out, and yet it's one of these things that if we do not address it, it could really undermine the very fabric not only of our nation but of the world. So here's this question. Can you explain, this is a very interesting concept you presented, how you see Muhammad hijacking Jesus, and what ways did he do this specifically, if you could name just a few?
Well, you know, that's a great question, Larry, and I have found in speaking and in just engaging Christians in various places that they're so surprised that Jesus figures prominently in the Quran, that he figures prominently in Islamic theology, that Muslims, in fact, generally have a rather positive view of Jesus. And so that's all kind of good news. You hear that, you think, well, what's the problem?
Yeah.
But what happens is that a lot of Jesus's teaching is turned upside down. Jesus speaks in the Quran and denies his own divinity. He denies that he's the Son of God. He's not the Savior of the world. In fact, his death on the cross is even denied. And so when you you understand what Muslims think about Jesus and what the Quran specifically teaches about Jesus, the whole gospel message that, you know, is at the very center of Christian faith is simply eviscerated. There is no gospel message at all. Jesus is reduced to a prophet. In fact, he's in second place behind Muhammad himself. Jesus' greatest prophecy in the Quran, it is believed, is his prediction that a greater prophet will come, and that's none other than Muhammad. And so Christians are very surprised on at least two points, that Jesus is important to Muslims and in the Quran, but he's not the same Jesus that Christians believe in and hold dear and recognize as God's Son and as Savior.
And I would add, that's so good, Craig, to point out, Jesus figures prominently in Islamic eschatology. And when we say eschatology, we're talking about the last days. And so when we look at the person of Jesus, and I might add, he figures prominently with all of the propaganda machine that the Islamic State puts out. The Islamic State puts out an interesting magazine called Dabiq. I do not recommend anyone to read it. It looks like something out of a Walking Dead comic book. Literally, it's grotesque. But Jesus, Isa, as he's known in the Quran, figures prominently. Jesus, according to Islamic eschatology, traditions, the hadiths, is the ultimate Muslim, Larry.
Wow.
He will come back. He will end Christianity. He will kill all the pigs. He will break all the crosses. He will make his Hajj, his pilgrimage. And then ultimately, he will die after instituting Sharia worldwide. And I think it's important that Christians know that. And I love this chapter on hijacking Jesus, because that's exactly what occurs, not only with ISIS, but let me make this very clear, in the Quran and with Islam.
Well, and that brings up a very interesting question for both of you, because I think one area where Christians try, and I think the problem is they're ill-equipped and maybe ill-informed, but we try to see common ground. And we definitely see common ground with our Jewish brothers and sisters in terms of the Jewish heritage of the faith. We see Yahweh as the same God that we worship. But I think sometimes Christians almost want to see Allah as the same God, almost like, well, Allah is just the name for the same God. Muslims worship him, and we worship him. But let me ask this question, and the question is specifically phrased this way. What area of ISIS's concept of God are deeply flawed and incorrect? And really, at the end of the day, is it the same God? Is it the same God that we and the Jews worship?
Well, I think that's a great question, Larry. And I want to say something again, that it may not be popular, but it's true, and we do need to speak truth. ISIS is a reflection of the Quran. And so I'm answering your question based on the Islamic holy writings and the Quran. There is not a verse like John 3:16 in the Quran, "For God so loved the world." I want to make this very clear because I've read the Quran. Allah does not love everyone. Allah loves the Muslim. He does not love the kefir, the unbeliever. By the way, kefir is the Islamic term. There's nothing neutral about it. The kefir can be beheaded, Surah 47:4. The kefir can be mocked, 83:34. The kefir can be plotted against, terrorized. A Muslim is not to be a friend of the kefir. And again, these are the words not of Muhammad, but remember, the Quran is the recitation. It is the very word of Allah, of God. It's always existed. And so don't tell me for a second, and no Christian should believe it for a moment, that Allah is the same as Yahweh, this God who we learn about in John 3:16, "For God so loved the world that he sent his Son." And Craig, I think it's something interesting we can talk about. What a great barometer of any religion or ism is, how are the marginalized, the fringes of society, treated? And Craig, when I think about in Luke, the parable of the Good Samaritan, and Jesus, how he elevated women, when I look at that and I compare that to the Quran, I mean, what does that say to you, Craig?
Well, I agree with your point you're making, Jeremiah. It's, you know a tree by the quality of its fruit. and as Jesus taught, and it's so obvious. And you've got people who are marginalized, people who are really put in a bad way, neglected. There's this fatalism that's common among Muslims. Well, you know, it's the will of God, whatever. And so it's always the Christians who lead the way, not atheists and not Muslims, who lead the way in charities, in, you know, orphanages, in hospitals, in hospices. And you just go right on down the line. Historically, that's what Christianity does. Christianity ends slavery. Islam continues slavery. Christianity elevates women in terms of equality. Islam does not do that. And you can go on and on with the list. And so I think the tree from which this fruit comes is a reflection, you might say, of God. And so the God of Muslims called Allah. Yeah, sure, it's an Arabic word. It's cognate to Syriac and Aramaic. It just means God, basically, is what it really means. In that sense, there's nothing special about the word itself, but the concept of the God behind that word Allah is a very defective concept. The only thing in common is that Muslims are monotheists. They believe there's one God. Okay, fine, that's correct. Jews and Christians believe that too. But their view of God as remote, as distant, and remember, just a little footnote, we've been through Ramadan recently. Ramadan celebrates, among other things, the fact that God gets just a little bit closer. But, you know, that just underscores the point I'm making. God is remote. He's distant. Mm-hmm. Muslims do not have any assurance that they're loved and reconciled, justified. That is one of the reasons why people are lured into committing acts of terrorism, and they call it. I find it very ironic. They call it martyrdom. It's in fact murder. It's murder-suicide. And they'll do that out of desperation, hoping because some mullah or imam has told them that this is how they will be guaranteed entry into paradise. And that just reflects, I think, the poverty of the understanding of God, that the only way to please him is to kill other people and die trying. And that's the only way you can have any assurance that in the next world you'll be blessed and rewarded. And I find that tragically sad. I'm not angry at Muslims. I'm just angry at this oppressive distortion of God they live under. And my hope is to see people like Muslims rescued, to see them delivered from such an oppressive thing.
And Larry, I want to say this. And if you're following with us at home, Craig has just quoted from Surah 495, that Allah is pleased with those who engage in jihad. And again, that is that Arabic term that means struggle. And modern moderate Muslims will say, well, that's this internal struggle for righteousness. The only problem is that in all kinds of places around the Middle East, those passages are taken literally. And so you see, you know, kill the idolater wherever you find him or her, behead them. These are passages not made up. They're not on some blog somewhere. This is in the holy text, the recitation, the Quran. And so I think Craig's made an invaluable point, though, and I want to say this. And Larry, I know you want to talk more about this. We don't have an axe to grind with Islam.
Yeah.
We have numerous Muslim friends. I have Muslim students here at the wonderful institution. I have the privilege to be a professor at here at Houston Baptist University. What I want to share, though, is if you want to see Islam in action, and by the way, I'm not the first one to say this. It does not originate with me. Read the Quran. The Quran is Islam in action, and 64% of it is what you should do with the kefir, the non-believer.
Wow. Well, and what I like about Jesus and Jihadis, the book, I think for one, for all of you who are listening, it is a go-to guide for really any believer, any Christian, to give you good, solid education on really the ideology, the theology of Islam, really confronting it, black and white, no hold bars. I mean, you will get it as it is, because I think sometimes we want to, in the name of political correctness, in the name of being sensitive, we want to perhaps dumb or water some things down. But like Dr. Johnston and Dr. Evans have been saying, we love the people. The problem is that a lot of the people are under the influence of something that is just ultimately restraining, restrictive, and destructive, and that's maybe putting it mildly. So let me ask this question. How does having a basic knowledge of the theology of ISIS, how does it help Christians stand strong against their terrorist agenda? And let me just give that in context, because people look at the book and think to themselves, okay, well, how does this really impact my life today? I understand how it impacts people overseas. I understand how this impacts people in other places in the world. But how does the theology of ISIS and ultimately the theology of Islam impact my life today in North America?
Well, that is a great question. And Craig, if you don't mind, I want to jump in here, because Islam, the vision of Islam is that the world will be Islamic. There is no middle ground. And so the theology of Islam will seep into everyday life if what ISIS dreams of becomes a reality, and that the entire world is Islamic. And I think that is extremely important to point out. The second thing that I want to point out, in one chapter of our book, and this is, again, if you didn't buy the book for any other reason, you should buy it for our chapter on trending terrorism. Larry, 125,000 social media messages a day are sent out by supporters of ISIS. And just so you know, you heard me correctly, that's 125,000.
Wow.
ISIS, and again, these are not people who are unsophisticated, living in some tent or bomb shelter somewhere. They are very well financed. They are organized. And let me tell you something, they are intentional. And they are using social media to lure Western youth. So if you're a mom out there listening to us right now, you need to be aware of what's happening on the social media with your kids, if you're a grandparent, with your grandkids, because let me tell you something, we are seeing all kinds of Westerners become interested, and the gateway to becoming interested and in joining the Islamic State is through social media. And they are sophisticated. They have editors. I mean, they have a media center. They have a propaganda center. And it looks, I mean, it rivals Hollywood.
Yeah.
Some of the things that they put together. And so, yeah, Craig, I think the theology is very real when you consider what's happening with it, especially in the transmedia world.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I think that's the first thing we need to make clear, is that a lot of people simply underestimate ISIS. They think it's just another terrorist group, here today, gone tomorrow. This is a whole other animal. And, in fact, that's why we have that extra report in the book. It's a special report from Lieutenant Commander Harry Gorham of the Royal Canadian Navy, because, you don't realize how sophisticated this group is. And when you read his report, I think it's beautifully written and well documented. This is somebody you ought to know. He has, he's been around the world in connection with the Navy, joint exercises with the United States Navy and Britain and so on. He's been the Horn of Africa, where there is just so much violence on the open water. He has been in Sudan. He had a child. I mean, he chokes up when he tells the story, a child die in his arms as a result from Islamic violence and warfare in the Sudan. And so he understands very well what the Islamic State is. It's no terrorist organization. If you think of it that way, it's not the JVs, as unfortunately the U.S. president remarked one time. These guys are serious. They're well organized. And so the first step in opposing them and ultimately defeating them is for people to wake up and understand what they really are.
Well, and Dr. Johnston, just to go back to what you were saying about their efforts, their very intentional efforts in terms of using social media to recruit Western youth, how specifically are they doing this? Because, again, this brings it right to home. People may look at a message or a book like this and think, how does it impact me? How does it impact my family, my children? And you hit the nail on the head. So can you really bring it close to home and let us know, hey, how are they intentionally using mediums like social media to reach out to the next generation?
Well, the Islamic State, I mean, didn't you know that jihadists are normal people too? And that's what they would have us believe on social media. When you see the videos they've put together, and again, I do not recommend anyone to watch them. I want to make that very clear. In researching for this book, Craig and I have seen things that just simply now cannot be unseen, unfortunately. But they want to make it clear that there's a video, and I talk about this in our chapter From California to the Caliphate, where there's a white Canadian young man who grew up loving hockey, playing hockey from a upper to middle class home, who went to join the Mujahideen and to do jihad, who they show him doing jihad and then dying. They actually show his dead body, and they make it very clear that, you know, these are normal people joining jihad, and we're normal, and you should join us. We want the world to be Islamic. And so they're targeting people through videos, to answer your question. They are using every, when I say cross-channel presence, you think of a social media platform, and the Islamic State is there. They are on Twitter, they are on Facebook, and they are on all of the other mediums, and they are recruiting Westerners. 20,000 Westerners have joined their cause.
Wow.
Recent report that's been out since the book went live is the fact that, yes, we are damaging the Islamic State, but their numbers are staying static because so many continue to join the caliphate. And so, you know, these videos, what they're doing online, how they're harassing people, it's all very well thought out, it's intentional, and it's organized, and it's something that we need to pay attention to. I mean, 90,000 Twitter messages a day.
Wow. And, you know, a lot of people are astonished to learn that they're attracting even women to join ISIS. I think, oh, my goodness, you got to be kidding me. Isn't this thing a boys' club? It's guys with guns. But it's also guys with girls. And a lot of these young women, they have no idea what they're being drawn into. And so that's why I just second what Jeremiah said a minute ago. Parents and grandparents, they need to know that ISIS is reaching children and grandchildren through the social media. You might not even know it. And we've read one tragic story after another here in Canada, and I'm glad Canada got mentioned, because everyone thinks about Canadians, you know, there's no prone to violence, you know, there's no, you know, Canadians don't have guns, et cetera, et cetera. But Canada has its problems too, and Canadian young people are being seduced and fooled. And we read, it's hardly a week goes by, there's not a story about distraught parents finding out that their son or daughter has been lured into, has disappeared, has now, you know, they find out by looking at email or something that they've decided to join ISIS. And the last thing they heard of, they had flown to Syria and they're gone. They don't know where they are. And, of course, sometimes they do find out later and they're horrified to discover that their son has died fighting for this this ill-conceived, misguided cause. So this is, you know, when we talk about 100 plus thousand messages per day or 90,000 tweets per day, that just sounds like a big statistic, but behind it are some very tragic personal stories.
Well, and Dr. Evans, let me ask you this question, because as we kind of wind down here on our time, I'm curious, What do you think that ISIS uses to draw our young people, draw people in the West? What is the appeal? What is the appeal, the deceptive appeal they're trying to use, and how can we really stand on guard against that?
Well, I think there are several things, and Jeremiah can elaborate after what I say about it. But I think number one, the West has lost its way. The West is full of moral relativity. The West, you know, is no longer officially Judeo-Christian in perspective. Agnosticism is prevalent in our schools, if not outright aggressive atheism. And so you have these estranged, disoriented kids. What do they believe in? Young people usually are idealistic. Well, what are the ideals? And families are broken up. Fathers are cheating on mothers. They're involved in adultery. And the kids are, you know, homes are broken. They don't know what to do. And then along comes the message of Islam, radical Islam, saying, well, here's the answer. There is a God out there. You do have a purpose in life. There is a moral code. And these other things, the decadent West is just that. It's decadent. Let us give you a purpose, something you can embrace, something not only to live for, but something even to die for.
Wow.
That's so good, Craig. And Larry, it really speaks to the church and the mission of the church. Unlike many churches or other social organizations today, the Islamic State has a job for everybody. I mean, no one is too old or weak or marginalized to be involved in the caliphate. And so this is the message that is resonating with our disconnected young people all over the world. I mean, we have young people that lack confidence, they lack social skills, and then the Islamic State, they know this. And therefore, their message, this message of join our family, come belong here, come join the caliphate, we'll take care of you, free housing, etc. That's why it's even resonating with women. And I want to make this point. The CIA has, for the first time in 50 years, introduced a new directorate called the Directorate of Digital Innovation, doing nothing but focusing on the social cyber world and counterterrorism. The Obama administration admitted the ISIS digital influence has expanded across the social media in an unprecedented way. And so that's the message that's resonating, and that's why we need to get back to the basics as a church. Jesus came for the marginalized. When I think about what he said in Isaiah 61, he quotes in his programmatic sermon in Luke 4, he's come to make to let people free and to bring the truth and peace. And I think that's a message that we can really work on as a church. There's obviously a need.
Well, and as we conclude, I have one more question. I found this absolutely fascinating, and I'll ask it, Dr. Evans and then Dr. Johnson. How were Martin Luther's words really prophetic, pointing to the struggle that we're in today currently with ISIS?
Well, Martin Luther was a very, very perceptive individual, and he could see Islam. I mean, he was a literate man. He had read the Quran. He had read other works. He knew history. He was fully aware of Islamic's aggressive expansionist tendency. A lot of people forget that. You know, one of my favorite countries to visit is Hungary. And they were for several centuries under the Islamic thumb during the Ottoman Turkish Empire days. A lot of people don't realize that. So half of Europe, the eastern half, was swallowed up by Islam and eventually was driven out. Centuries before that, North Africa was invaded, Spain was invaded, and most of Spain was occupied, and Islamic armies pushed forward into southern France. I mean, Europeans today, Westerners today, Americans today, just they need to know history. And this is an expansionist movement, and you need to know that. And otherwise, I think we just go to sleep. We assume other people are basically like us, where you can practice your religious views in freedom. You can go to church or synagogue or temple or mosque or not. It's up to you, and everybody can live together. Jews and Christians believe that, but that's not what Muslims believe. Islam is not just a religion separated from the state. It is the state. It's the whole of society. Yeah. Sharia law is for everybody. And that's a main point. People, Christians especially, need to understand that.
Absolutely. And Dr. Johnston, we have only about 30 seconds, so if you could give a very quick response, and I'll close us up here.
Absolutely. Luther, like many Christians today, never met or interacted with a Muslim. That did not stop him from educating himself so he could have an intelligent discussion about comparative faiths. And so Luther thought he was living in the end days. He saw what was happening with the Turks as the end of days, prophesied in Ezekiel 38:39. And what he said was Christians must be warned and they must learn. And I think that resonates today, Larry.
Absolutely. The book is Jesus and the Jihadis. And if you want to learn more about Dr. Jeremiah Johnston, go to ChristianThinkers.com. And for more about Dr. Craig Evans, it's CraigAEvans.com. Thank you both so much for being with us. I so appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're very
absolutely
welcome. be with you.
And the book is Jesus and the Jihadis. It will be eye-opening and is extremely relevant to your life today. I believe it will be a blessing, and it will really challenge you. All right.
That was awesome. Way to go, Craig.
Well, thanks, Jeremiah. I'm-